Do you like movies, comic books, science fiction, and more? Then you've come to the right place. This is the Rebel Radio Podcast. You can find us at therebelradiopodcast.com, follow us on Facebook, Instagram, Twitter, and join our Patreon for just $2 a month where you get exclusive episodes. Thank you for listening, and enjoy the show. Welcome to another episode of the Rebel Radio Podcast. This is Mark.
This is Matt.
This is Long, the entertainer. Yeah.
The entertainer.
I was going to say something about, like, I guess the birthday boy weekend for me, but that sounds kind of weird. I'm not really a boy.
Oh, I should have went with the killer.
Yeah, I thought you were going to say the killer.
I feel like
I momentarily forgot what the movie we were talking about tonight.
I actually thought about that before we started recording. I'm like, what's he going to name himself? I was like, I bet he's going to go with the killer.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that might have been a good choice.
Yeah.
And but you didn't, so you failed.
Yeah.
but we're recording Friday night, as we always usually do, unless something comes up. Occasionally record Saturday, but it's the day before my birthday, so it's my birthday pick movie this week.
Big 5-0.
Happy birthday.
5-0. Fuck yeah. I'm not speeding things up here. Goddamn. I don't know. I don't know how I feel about it. I've been on vacation this week from work, so I guess I haven't really thought about it that much getting a year older.
44?
44.
Yeah.
44.
Thanks for telling everybody, Long. You know, I like to keep it secret.
I said 24, dude.
Oh, yeah. 24. Yeah, 24.
Over the 24-year-old ladies then.
Right? Yeah. Right. 24 with 20 years of experience.
Oh, yeah. That's right. Lots of experience. If I only knew now what I knew then, you know.
That's true.
Used it to my advantage in certain ways. But, yes.
Like
the week at home, mostly. I did spend a day in Galveston, but mostly just doing a lot of stuff around the house, going through things, trying to clean some, and a staycation, a missed day, which is what a lot of people are doing to miss a COVID-filled world. It's all you can do is kind of stay home and stay safe. And
some people are working from home.
Yeah. Well, yeah.
That's true.
People are working from home, and then they go on vacation. They're like, well, I'm still home.
But I think
to you folks who are working from home,
right?
Stuck with the kids.
But I did, like I said, did get out one day, and it was nice to get out for a little bit. But otherwise, just staying home and a couple more days, and back to the grind. Unfortunately, it is what it is. So.
Back How to are you guys? Life, back to reality. That old 90s song,
yes, sir.
I always sing that.
Well, before pre-show, you guys were fussing like a couple of grumpy old men about work, and I'm just sitting here thinking to myself, well, thank God I wasn't at work this week, motherfuckers.
Man, it was a little bit of a mess this week. Well, you know, we had our whole warehouse shut down on accident. Like, they didn't build any pallets Tuesday to send out.
What?
No coke. Yep. Zero. So they had to roll into Tuesday.
Oh,
and a Wednesday, and then of course they couldn't deliver hardly anything on Wednesday that was supposed to get delivered Wednesday, so they rolled Wednesday into Thursday, and then some of that even got rolled into Friday, and we still have like 10 stores that are going to get rolled to tomorrow, so wow. It caused a lot of hecticness.
Wait till I go tell my router about this.
Yeah.
Oh. Yeah, my guy who routes all the trucks at our place.
Oh, yeah, logistics dude.
Yeah.
Well, when I put in for this week's vacation back in January, I thought, hey, my birthday's on a Saturday this year. You know, maybe I'll throw a party or something. It was my original plan. And we would have been having a party tomorrow. You guys have been coming and hanging out. But then COVID kind of happened and it was like, well, fuck, man, there's no party plans.
Well, you know, I can go this year without seeing you twerk. Oh, come on.
You live for that birthday twerk.
Birthday twerk.
Good lord. Yeah,
the world doing is twerking.
The world is not ready for this body to twerk.
Ooh. Oh, okay.
I might throw a hip out or something doing that.
Throw a hip out.
God damn, the other day I was cleaning the dinner table off and my knee locked up, man. I could barely move for like a couple minutes like an old person. So shit, you know. Can't imagine trying to twerk. I'm like, God damn. And man, that's a thought people don't need. Please don't envision me twerking.
Yeah.
And hey, did y'all see in Japan they built a life size Gundam?
Yeah.
That's pretty cool. And apparently it's gonna walk eventually. This is the same thing you might have heard about a few years ago. Apparently they've been working on this for like 5 years. They finally have it. They finally unveiled it to the public, and it's pretty cool. And apparently it's going to walk eventually. The idea is that it will walk a few feet.
They made it flip the bird. Yeah, they did.
That's awesome.
Yeah.
Yeah. I thought that was pretty cool, though. You know, as long as they don't take over. You know, it is almost Judgment Day, according to the movie. You know?
That's true.
So, it could happen. If Terminator has his way, the machines could take over. But we shall see. But let's get into today's show, the Mark birthday show. I'm not very much one to talk about myself, though, so it feels weird saying that, but it is my birthday pick, and next month we'll have Matt's birthday pick, and then long years is in January. You're the oddball. You're a few months away, but that's okay.
Hey, man.
You had yours already this year.
Aquarius, man.
Yeah, you had yours already this year with what did we do? We did Beetlejuice.
Beetlejuice.
Right? For your birthday, so yeah.
No, we did Wrath of Khan.
Oh, that's right.
Oh, yeah, that's right.
Last year was Beetlejuice. This year was Beetlejuice. That's right.
So, yeah.
But so for mine today, we're doing a favorite of mine, which we'll talk about in a little bit. But before we get to that, let's kick off the show as we always do with Download This, where we tell you what we might have watched this week, streamed, checked out, played, whatever. You know, whoever wants to go first, man.
Matt, you go first this time.
Yeah. So I know I told you guys in pre-show that I had Jackie watch Ford v Ferrari, and I think it's arguably Christian Bale's best performance. I just love his personification of Ken Miles, and just how he loves cars, and he's so passionate about what went into the GT40. I had to work on my car a bit today, this week. I was like, man, I feel like Ken Miles whenever he's, in the garage trying to reroute the oil line and he's listening to the race, on the radio. But, that movie's grown on me. I didn't think I'd ever rewatch that, like a movie like that, you know, an inspirational true story type movie. That's not the kind of movie I rewatch. You know, I rewatch a lot of action movies, usually. And this one, you know, I may need to buy it. You know, wait until there's like some special edition, and actually own it.
Have you ever seen that movie? What was it? It's about the Tucker 150 car.
Huh. I guess not.
Yeah. Yeah, I forgot. It's called Tucker. That's the name of the...
called Tucker?
Yeah. And there's only two or half a dozen of them built. But okay. Supposedly it was like a car that was way ahead of its time.
Oh, is that the one where they made it to where the headlights turned whenever the car turned? And it was like super fast. Like
had AC.
Like, and then Ford and Chevy and Dodge all like pulled together to shut him down because he was going to, he had made these cars that were a little bit more advanced than theirs. Mm-hmm. That's a good story.
I stepped away for a second. You're still talking about the same damn movie we talked about.
No. We went on a tangent about another automobile movie, a true story automobile movie.
Yeah.
Tucker. Yeah. Called Tucker.
I think Jeff Bridges was in it. See, it may have been Jeff Bridges. Someone else.
And,
that was William Hurt, wasn't it?
Maybe, yeah.
I know, Mark, you and I kind of toss this as a movie that is possibly a Patreon in the future, but I had Jackie watch The Marine since it's just ridiculous John Cena's first movie
acting role.
Yes, have you seen it, Long? The Marine?
No. Mm-hmm.
Yeah,
it was Jeff Bridges.
It's like there's so many explosions in that movie. It feels like a Michael Bay film, like on steroids. It's Michael Bay times seven or something with the explosions. And the bad guy is the T-1000, Robert Kirkpatrick. And, of course, John Cena is the good guy. The cool thing in that movie that I like the most, even though that it's very, very ridiculously cheesy, is the Camaro Z28 cop car. And John Cena, shifting through traffic, trying to catch up to this van that has his wife in it. They basically kidnap his wife, and he's the Marine, and he's going to go catch him. And you can tell it's very Arnold-esque in this movie. It's like, he's like, man, I want to be the next Arnold. Make this movie like an 80s Arnold film, but I want you to combine all of Arnold's 80s action films, the good, bad, and the ugly, and put it into one. And, That's basically what the movie looks like. So if you have got HBO Max, then check it out. You know, it might be worth watching if you want to watch a bad movie. You know, other than that, I think that. Oh, you know what? I bought the Naked Gun. Naked Gun went on sale for $5, so I bought the Naked Gun on Vudu, and I was like, man, I gotta have that. Just for the opening scene alone.
Mm-hmm. You know it's on Netflix.
Yeah. Surely you're not serious.
No, I'm serious. It's on Netflix.
That's it. That's Airplane.
Naked Gun's on there too. It's on there most of the time. It just
Airplane's on there.
It just did not happen to be on there that time we did it on the show, but usually Naked Gun's on Netflix.
Yeah. So that's about it for me. You guys?
You go ahead, Mark. It's your birthday. Stop twerking, Mark. Stop twerking.
No. I watched Grave of the Fireflies, finally.
Oh, my God.
Oh, wow.
That's a heavy movie. That's a hard movie to watch. Very well done, of course, being from Studio Ghibli. But what an incredible, risky story to tell through animation. I only say risky because that kind of story is not normally told in an anime style. It's usually done live action. So doing a very grown-up story in a form that's generally geared towards children was a bold move, especially in 1988. But I applaud the studio for doing it. Miyazaki didn't direct it or write the story, but he was a producer because when Studio Ghibli was first starting out. And it's based on a novel of the same name, I believe. And it's a wonderful film, even if it is very hard to watch. But I've been wanting to watch it. My goal is to try to get as many of the Studio Ghibli films as I watch as I can. Hopefully watching all of them eventually. And so I wanted to check this one off, and I was thinking, like, you know, let's get the sad one out of the way and move on to happier stuff. so to speak.
Good way of looking at it.
And it is sad. It is very sad, but it's one of those movies that if you're not moved by watching that film, then maybe recheck your thinking as a human being. It's one of those kind of movies.
Yeah. Actually avoid watching that movie.
it's
I can't stand watching sad stuff.
It's tough, trust me. And it's animated, and that's what tells you it's a good movie, because even in animation they're able to pull off a story that can move you in quite a lot of ways. But it was a good film. I also started watching The Last Dance, the Chicago Bulls documentary. I'm only a couple episodes in, but man, that is it is definitely intriguing. It pulls you in. It's a very well done documentary. It really gives you a look inside the minds of those guys and what they were going through in that final season for the Bulls, and looking back on the previous seasons, how that team was developed. And there were things, I guess, I didn't know. You know, I was in high school when all that was happening, or coming out of high school and going into college, and I never realized how underpaid Scottie Pippen was and some of the different things that they went through. But it's cool to see an inside look at the very super popular years of Michael Jordan and everything. So lived through a lot of that too. So it's kind of neat to see. And I'm definitely going to continue that. I know I'm absolutely horrible about starting shows I don't finish, but this one I will finish. I mean, it's only 10 episodes and I'll get through it and, you know, watch it a little bit here, a little bit there. And, I'm trying to think about watching anything else this week. You would think I would have watched more being that I've been home, but I haven't really watched that much because I've been doing stuff around the house and I've been playing, the Star Wars Galaxies emulator a lot. I've been playing that still. And, cool to be back in that universe that I used to play a lot in, and I feel like there was something else I watched, but I just can't recall it at the moment. You know, getting old. You know, I am officially getting older tomorrow, so you know I can't remember everything. Maybe it'll come back to me in a second. You know?
Can't remember everything.
Yeah.
Well, I watched this little-known cult movie called Sorcerer. Came out in 1977. Have you guys ever heard of it or seen it?
Isn't that the one that had the orb of crap? You know, the orb from Ready Player One, or is that Merlin?
No, it's not.
No, it is nothing to do with fantasy.
Okay.
Despite its title, Sorcerer derives its name from one of the trucks that's named Sorcerer, and basically the premise of the movie. It's directed by William Friedkin, who's famous for the Exorcist movies. So he directed this movie. It stars Roy Scheider and from Jaws. And basically, it's about four outcasts that have this job to do. They're getting paid like double for salary because of a dangerous job. All they have to do is drive in these rickety old cargo trucks. And they had to transport three boxes of unstable TNT up a mountain.
Wow.
And that's the basic premise. And because there's an oil well that's on fire, and they need the dynamite to extinguish it.
Okay.
Yeah. So basically, it's a slow going because they had to introduce all the main characters. But once they're in the half hour, 40-minute mark, when they get into the trucks, man, you see these guys trying to transport these boxes of dynamite in these old trucks, custom-made haulers, and they're old by probably two or three decades, up a mountain, and they're coming up with all these obstacles, go up against these obstacles while trying to keep the trucks stable, because if the trucks shake too much, the dynamite will explode, you know?
So on that trip pretty quick.
Yeah, and there's this one scene that's basically that make the whole movie where they had to torrential rain. They had to go over this suspension bridge that's made of wood and rope, and it's swinging, and these trucks are trying to get across this torrential rainfall and rapids underneath. It is like one of the most suspenseful movies I've ever watched. And once they get past that, there's more obstacles thrown in the way to keep them from reaching their goal, you know. But you grow to like those characters too, and it's definitely one of those movies that you will never heard of. But once you watch it, you'll be glad to that you've seen it, you know. And it's a very good movie. Highly recommend it. Sorcerer from 1977. Yeah, check it out.
Sorcerer.
If you ever get a chance. Yeah, Amazon Prime has it in the best visual quality as possible. So, yeah. But that's what I saw this week. And I didn't really play very many video games, and I just really basically surfed YouTube all week just trying to get my mind off work.
Nice.
You know?
So. Man, I had this dream about you, Long. Uh-oh. Don't get the wrong idea.
Oh,
I had this dream where I prank called you, and you're like, "Hey, I know it's you." And I was like, "Oh, sorry." And you're like, "Yeah, you got me in trouble at work." And I was like, "What?" And you're like, yeah, it's pretty bad. Just don't do it anymore." And then I woke up and I was like, did that happen yesterday or did that just happen? And it was like, it was so real.
Yeah.
I was like, cause it sounds like something that wouldn't be beneath me, you know, it's like call you and jack with you at work or something.
But
I was like, I wonder if that actually happened or not. I was like, did that really happen?
someone's been calling my cell phone, and it's my corporate office phone number. It's so weird.
The corporate office?
Yeah, like the main receptionist desk is calling me or something by accident. I don't know. It's weird. So
strange happenings.
Yeah.
Like somebody knocked on the door today, and like I generally won't answer unless I know someone's coming over. I just like I'm not gonna buy whatever you're fucking selling, so I'm not gonna answer the door, right? And like I'm in the dining room area, the kids, the white Waverly in the living room watching TV, so they could probably see the TV. And I'm just standing there like they stood out there for almost 5 minutes waiting to see if I was gonna open the door. And I was like, what the hell? And then they left. They left the. It was the census people. They left a piece of paper on this on the.
Oh.
The door. And I'm like, really?
Oh. Yeah.
Like, you know, but still, I just don't. That's just a general rule. I just don't answer the door, you know, because you never know who it's going to be. So, but anyway, so let's get into today's featured film. My birthday pick for the year of 2020, a movie that came out in 1989. A movie I didn't see till probably sometime a little after high school, because I saw Hard Boiled first when it came to John Woo films. And then I went back and watched this film, which is just as impactful as Hard Boiled was on me liking action films and stuff. And that is his 1989 classic, The Killer. And so you guys had never seen this movie until this week, right?
No, never seen it.
Correct.
I'm not surprised Matt hadn't seen it. I was a little surprised that Long hadn't seen it, being that you followed Asian cinema a little bit more.
Yeah.
But it's a movie, I think, that which we'll summarize in just a second. But I just want to say that it may have less of an impact on you if you saw Hard Boiled first. But, but make no mistake that this movie is just as influential as Hard Boiled, if not more so in some ways. And I guess I'll summarize it since it's my movie pick. And So in this film, Chow Yun-Fat plays Ah-Jong, or just Jong for short, a assassin who wants to retire, but he wants to take one last hit to pay for surgery after in a firefight, he causes a jazz singer to go blind by accident. So he has a conscience and he feels bad about it. So he wants to take on this final hit to pay for her surgery. But of course, things go wrong as he is double crossed by his agency that he works for, and they want him dead. And along with a cop that's on his trail, played by Danny Lee, which he plays Inspector Lee. And the cops are after him, and in turn, the cops are after the organization that he's after. So him and the cop kind of team up with each other to take down the rest of the assassination organization. I guess the triads, I guess, is what they are, essentially. Yeah. And it leads them forming a volatile friendship to take down the people that double-crossed Jong's character. And it's that simple of a plot, but it's also a very deep movie about two men and honor amongst thieves and an assassin who is not just your everyday killer. As there's a scene in the film where he saves a little girl and he has a conscience to himself. He has a moral code that he lives by. And this movie, when it came out, was strangely not a huge hit in Hong Kong. Wu's later films, A Better Tomorrow, was a pretty big hit, but Part Two was not as big of a hit. Neither was this. And then he rebounded with The Bullet in the Head and Hard Boiled. But this movie found an audience later on through home video. And then once it hit America, directors here started talking about the film and critics. And this film did find an audience and became very influential to people that filmed that make movies today. And it's one of Quentin Tarantino's favorite films. He's talked about The Killer a lot. And this movie has gone on to be quite influential. So what did you guys think on y'all's first watch?
Well, to quote Frank, I like it.
I like it. It's super. No, it's good. I think it's, I mean, you watch this and there are other movies that kind of like bounce in and out of your mind. Like, I've seen this somewhere else. I've seen these action scenes somewhere. And you know, Mark, you know, you said that from a long time ago. You say, man, you've got to watch this John Woo film. You've got to watch this John Woo film. You know, you'll see how things always tie back to this, you know, his style and how he kind of, you know, set the bar you know, as far as action films. And, you know, I think, you know, like The Matrix, you know, heavily influenced by John Woo. You can just see how this film, you know, was inspirational to other films and directors and screenplay writers and storyboard people that, that make storyboards for action scenes, everything. I mean,
it's funny,
you know, the yeah, the church, the doves.
It's funny you say that though, because John Woo doesn't use storyboards. He doesn't like them. He does everything in his mind. He pictures a scene, and whatever comes in when he wakes up that morning, he's going to shoot a scene that day. He thinks about what it's going to look like, and he makes it all up on set.
Yeah, and also kept people from not being able to steal his ideas.
Yeah,
and I know that was another point for him. But Yulong, how'd you feel about the film? We all watched it together.
I'm surprised I've never seen this movie. I like this, and you know, we didn't mention this earlier, but we all got. I don't think we did, but we all. You, me, Matt, I haven't seen you guys in months, and we got together and watched this at Mark's house. And, you know, I ended up enjoying watching this movie, you know, with company, you know, with y'all, you know, and we're just shooting the breeze, watching the movie, having fun, you know, eating pizza.
Yes. You know? Carbs.
Yeah. Yeah. Lovely, lovely carbs.
Yeah.
And, yeah, it was a good movie. I mean, admittedly, a lot of the stuff, probably the first two-thirds of it, was stuff that's innovative back then, but kind of standard issue action to me, you know, because we're so used to it. We've seen so much action in the past most of our lives, so it doesn't seem like it didn't rewrite anything for me personally, but I do appreciate the style that it innovated with. But I have to admit, though, the church scene was what really finally got me into it. You know, definitely one of the best shootouts I've seen.
Over 20,000 rounds of ammunition during church scene.
Yeah, it's a miracle that there was not a freak actual bullet in that movie.
considering they use real guns on Woo films, Woo does not like to use wooden fake guns. He likes them to look real. He says the wood guns, they don't come across on screen right, so he does use real weapons on screen.
Yeah. Of course, you know, firing all those weapons, I mean, Chow Yun-Fat, he has gone on record saying that his hands swell double their size after shooting a long day of shooting with guns all day, you know?
Right.
It definitely impacts your hands. I can't imagine doing that all day.
Yeah, there's a scene in this movie. He had just finished filming A Better Tomorrow Part 3, which wasn't directed by Woo. We only directed the first two. And he hurt his hand on set, and he came immediately to the set of the killer. And that's why he has that bandana on his hand on the one scene. So Woo decided just to leave it in there because he thought it looked cool. He figured maybe it was something Assassin would do to cover the fingerprints on the weapon or whatever. So his hand really was injured at the beginning of the film.
Wow.
But yeah, it's definitely one of the best action pieces of the late 80s. Mm-hmm. Yes, it's great watching a Hong Kong movie without the Chinese government interfering. So
that's true.
With their committee, film by committee style of filmmaking.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Well, and even for this film, Woo did fight with the studio. This was a 90-day shoot, which was a long shoot for a Hong Kong film. 30 days of that was just the church scene alone. So a third of the shooting was just those last 30 minutes of the film, which was quite incredible if you think about to get it all right. There were some things like the boat race, the assassination during the boat. They had to film around the real boat race because that's the only way they could recreate it. And they had to film that very secretly. The people that were putting on the boat ceremony did not want civilians to know that there was a film crew there. So that's why there's a lot of shots that are shot really far away, because they had to hide the cameras and shoot Chow Yun-Fat in the distance and shoot the assassination and put it and edit it all together. So I thought that was interesting. So even being there was no government interference, there was things they had to fight with to get things done. Filming in the hospital, they had like 3 hours to film, so they had to get it done very quickly so the hospital could be opened back up for other patients. and things like that. His producer, I lost the name here. I had in front of me.
Sweetheart.
Sweet. Yeah. They fought a lot. You know, Hark was not happy with the final edit of A Better Tomorrow Part 2. And he argued with the studio to fire John Woo. And the studio said no. So Hark found other ways to fuck with Woo by turning down projects, which still got made, including Bull in the Head, Once a Thief. He fought with this movie because originally he thought that the Jenny scene should be shown in flashbacks. And Wu liked his edit of the film better, where she gets blind at the beginning of the film and it gives Jong a motivation for the rest of the film. And Wu was initially won. So as much as Hark didn't like Wu and tried to mess with him, Wu essentially won everything. The studio just said, hey, make the movie you want to make. He tried to cut the movie down almost 30 minutes. Studio said, no, we like the cut that Wu turned in. So Wu had to fight with his own producer in this film too for a lot of things, to the point where Hark even made his own edit of the movie and turned it in, and the studio was like, no, we like Wu's edit. So pretty crazy stuff going on behind the scenes in this film, as Wu's trying to make the best movie he can, and he's got a producer that's just arguing with everything. Wu also was very much trying to pay homage to Martin Scorsese with this film. Mean Streets was a big inspiration for the movie, because Wu adored Scorsese growing up and wanted to be like him. And so this was his dedicated movie to Scorsese, which I think was pretty cool.
That's pretty cool.
And we were watching it, The Doves, which has become a John Woo trademark. This is actually the first film where he used the doves. So he had not used them until this. There's no doves in A Better Tomorrow, but they do show up in pretty much almost everything else he made.
They do it in Hard Boiled.
Yeah.
I don't remember.
Yeah, they're in Hard Boiled.
Okay. Yeah. Whenever that hitman goes onto the boat.
Yeah, on the boat. Well, and then the whole opening scene's in a birdhouse, remember? A Hard Boiled.
Yeah.
Yeah. And then I think they're even in, I'm trying to remember where they're at in Wind Talkers. I know they're in there, but it was kind of weird in Wind Talkers. That was a World War II movie, and all of a sudden there's doves in there, but there are doves in there too. And,
I read that they used the soundtrack from Red Heat in this film.
Well, that was a big problem with a lot of Hong Kong productions. So they just didn't have music budgets. So it's not uncommon to see films in the 80s use music from other films and things like that.
Yeah,
it was cheaper.
That's a common practice, stealing music from other medium.
Very, very common.
From around the world.
Even animes did it. They used music from other animes, and it was just a common thing back then. Not as much now, because there's more money to be spent. But back then, yeah, it was very, very common. In fact, it was so... his other film, A Better Tomorrow, they actually had a score for that movie, but the score to the film, the rights went out on the score, so like some of the American releases have like huge music in them. So there's never... That's why I think I was texting you guys. There's never been a proper American release of A Better Tomorrow with the actual music on it. So maybe one day. Of course, this movie is also known, we were talking about its influence, the Mexican standoff. This movie made it very popular. And like you said, nowadays we see that happen a lot in movies, but The Killer is one of the first movies to use that to a point where it's done a couple of times in the film and it became a standard for John Woo to use. He was inspired by The Wild Bunch to do that in this film. And it works pretty well in a couple of scenes. And of course there's a Mexican standoff in Hard Boiled and Face Off. Broken Arrow, pretty much most Woo films have a Mexican standoff at some point in them, you know. But it's cool because I think it adds attention to a scene, especially in the house scene where Inspector Lee and Jong first come to blows face to face, and Jenny's right there in the middle of it all, and she's wondering what's going on, and it's just like it adds an intensity to that scene, and it also gives those two men a moment to realize, like, hey, do we really want to kill each other, or do we want to work this out? You know, and it's a really important scene in the film.
Yeah, it's very comical too. It's just, you know, shrimp head, small B.
Which I was telling you guys when watching it, the original English cuts they did say Dumbo and Mickey Mouse, but Disney used to own the films when Miramax distributed them, and they didn't have a problem with it. When their rights came up, all of a sudden Disney didn't like them using the words Disney or Dumbo and Mickey Mouse anymore. So since 2002, when they no longer had the rights, all releases now have changed it. Even though it was Dumbo and Mickey Mouse all the way back to 1989. So I was right on that. So they had to change it after Miramax Disney lost the rights to the film's distribution. So they did have to change it to just using their real names. Well, he called him, what was it, something B? Yeah.
Small B.
Small B, which is just kind of weird. I don't know.
Yeah.
It's weird when it's translated. I'm sure it sounds much better in Chinese or Cantonese. So. Yeah. Yeah.
And what's funny is, due to those badly translated subtitles, is this movie was sold to, when they put this out in American audiences in the theaters, they sold this as an action comedy because of badly translated titles. And there's no comedy really in this movie at all. It's all handled a pretty serious movie, you know. Maybe a little.
You see a kid get shot. Yeah,
I mean, it's a very bloody, violent movie. There's been talks of, you know, remakes of this film all the way back to 1991. Walter Hill almost remade it. Keanu Reeves almost remade this in 1995, but he walked away from the project. And even today, John Woo himself is talking about remaking this film himself for American audiences. But I think it's one of those movies that if it gets remade, I think maybe Woo doing it would be the best way to do it. But at the same time, I think just leave it alone. I think the movie stands on its own as it is very well.
Who would you cast in the roles?
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, John Woo's talked about
that's
doing
a good question.
John Woo's talked about doing it with Lupita Nguyen and doing a female assassin. That would be interesting. But you're right. Like, you know, there's a certain element of honor amongst all the actors in this movie. A lot of them were friends of Chow Yun-Fat and John Woo's, so they all felt like a bunch of friends in a way, getting together and making a movie. In fact, the only actor was the girl who plays Jenny was the only one that wasn't really known to the rest of the cast. They brought her in because they wanted somebody who could actually sing. So I think when you get that watching The Killer, you get that feel that all these people know each other, and you get that honor amongst thieves vibe going. And so if you're going to cast this for American audiences in modern days, it's like, would you capture that feel again? Especially his buddy who double crosses him. You feel like the pain in John's eyes that he's crossed by his buddy, and it's really well acted for an action film. And you'd have to capture all that again and have actors can really pull it off and not make it just an overblown action film. I think you have to have some sort of conscience to it if you're going to remake it, just like this movie has.
Yeah. And if Chow Yun-Fat's character wasn't interesting, it would have been a less interesting movie, right, for sure.
Yeah. Like,
if he didn't have any death or some kind of sense of remorse. Yeah.
Yeah.
And it'd just be another generic film.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And I think that's what works so well with Woo's films. And I think sometimes people make fun of the premise of Face Off, which we did on the show, or Broken Arrow even. But if you really look at the depth of those movies, yeah, they sometimes on the surface can be generic, but there's always this thing between the characters in his films. Like you said, Chow Yun-Fat's Jong's interesting character. The motivations behind John Travolta's character in Broken Arrow may seem kind of cheesy, but there's a reason he truly believes in what he's doing in that film. And the same in Face Off. Like, you feel bad for Archer's character that he has to go through all this to save the city of Los Angeles and become the man he hates the most in the world. And there is something, I think, to be said about Woo's films, the depth he gives to his action characters. And The Killer is definitely one of those where Jong is not just your everyday run-of-the-mill assassin, as you might get in, like you said, a very generic action film.
Yeah. I give it an A-, B+. How would you guys?
I mean, I give it a solid A. I mean, this movie is some of the great action films I've ever seen. Influenced me for things I like in a lot of ways, and I think it still holds together well. That was the first song
I'll probably give it a slightly higher rating if I was paying attention more instead of just hanging out with you guys.
That was the first time I had watched it in a couple of years, and and I still like it a lot. I lean towards Hardboiled a little bit more when it comes to Wu films, yeah. But I still like The Killer a lot.
Yeah, I feel the same way because I watched Hardboiled first, and it's a watching this movie versus Hardboiled, it's a little underwhelming for me, you know, because it was like everything else is standard except for the church yeah. scene.
Yeah, you know? I saw them, even though I saw Hardboiled first, I saw The Killer pretty quickly afterwards because I seeked out his films. So I think it held its impact for me where I could see if he had years apart between them and you'd see Hardboiled several times. I could see that, you know, how it might have a little less of an impact. So that makes sense.
Yeah.
But a solid A for me.
That makes sense.
What'd you give him, Matt?
Yeah. A as well. I just think, you know, the story, the action, you know, what it meant for other films, you know, I feel like it's solid A.
Cool. And yeah. I'm glad you guys watched it with me. It was fun the other night hanging out and watching it. And a good pick for my birthday this year is a film that I really, really like quite a bit. So it's a good choice. So John Woo's The Killer. It's not streaming anywhere. It does pop up on Netflix every now and then, or even Amazon Prime. It's one of those things like where they might buy the rights for a couple months and it shows up. So keep an eye out there for it if you've never seen it and you want to watch it and see if it shows up on there. So that's going to bring us to, our weekly top five then, which we're going to talk our top five favorite action stars that we've grown up and admired. And I guess I could get the ball rolling since it's my birthday pick this week. My list is kind of interesting. I didn't go with necessarily who I think is the best, but guys that influenced me growing up. And so this tells you how tight my list is because these are my honorable mentions. My honorable mentions include Jackie Chan, Tom Cruise, and Bruce Lee. I mean, those three guys right there alone could be in the top five. This list was – when I sent the text out to you, I'm like, oh, it's an easy list. And I'm sitting down to make a list. I'm like, this is really fucking hard. This is not an easy list to make.
Yeah.
You know? I mean, I think with Bruce Lee, we know he's probably one of the greatest martial artists to ever live. His movie influence wasn't enough for me to maybe jump in the top five. Of course, Tom Cruise is, we've all grown up watching his films. And of course, Jackie Chan, was one of the first Asian cinema actors I think I ever saw on screen. So they deserve mentions that. And that number five though.
He does his own stunts.
Oh yeah. Yeah. He did all his own stunts.
He should have been at least in the top five just for that alone. Well, showing off his bloopers, showing his real injuries. Stuff, you know, because every action star really uses doubles, yeah. You know.
Well, and like I mentioned, stunt. Tom Cruise does a lot of his own stunts because of guys like Jackie Chan and stuff that he grew up watching too, you know. And but at number five, I do have the guy who starred in this movie today, Chow Yun Fat, because he was a guy, Hardboiled, The Killer, A Better Tomorrow. Those movies really influenced me for the type of action movies I like, and I just couldn't leave him off the list because, without seeing movies like The Killer and Hardboiled, I might not be into some of the films I'm into. So I had to put Chow Yun on number five there.
Go ahead, Matt, since your picture's right next to Mark.
Yeah, I'm going to go with the action stars that I was introduced with. I also have Bruce Lee as an honorable mention. I really, really like Enter the Dragon. But I feel like, you know, if he would have been able to continue his career, he would have gotten a lot higher on this list for me. But I went with Harrison Ford as number five since, I saw Raiders of the Last Ark growing up, and I, you know, and Star Wars, and I just pictured him as an action star whenever, you know, I saw his movies, and I think you could classify him as an action star.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I have an honorable mention, and I'm going to use what's his name?
What's
name? Yeah, I know. I just had it in my mind too. It just left my brain. I hate that. I had a brain fart just now. I'm sorry, Liam Neeson.
Oh, nice. Really, yeah.
For the first half of his career, he did a lot of dramatic roles, and he decided to change up his career by taking on action roles. And Taken, you know, that goes without mentioning, of course. And from Taken, to the latest, yeah. And then to the latest one where he plays a snowplow guy fighting against the underworld in a snowplow. It's kind of a black comedy. So, but, and The Gray, where he was out.
I like that movie.
That was a really good movie too. But that's my honorable mention. But number five, I would have to go with Sylvester Stallone. Nice. I really enjoyed his movies like Cliffhanger and Demolition Man and why do I keep forgetting The Expendables, you know? Mm-hmm. And his boxing movies have to count as action movies because the dude is sacrificing his body to be playing Rocky, you know? And he's a very versatile, he's definitely one of the best actors on my list. You know, he could play a very relatable character if, you know, when he wants to. So a very sympathetic character as well, you know, but that's my number five. What's your number four, Mark?
Number four, I have Kurt Russell. Man, you know, Big Trouble, Little China, The Thing, just more movies from my childhood that I grew up watching. Tombstone, which we talked
about. Captain Ron.
Captain Ron. Tombstone, which we talked about last week, one of my favorite movies of all time. Again, he's similar to that Harrison Ford pick that maybe people don't picture him as an action movie, but for me, growing up, man, I wanted to be as cool as Kurt Russell, and he made some of my favorite movies ever on screen. Breakdown, that was a good movie, where he played kind of played the next door neighbor action guy, and now all the way to playing Santa Claus on the Christmas movie on Netflix.
Is that an action movie?
Hey, man, he flies his sleigh around and crashes it.
And sings Elvis. So.
Yeah, he was in the Elvis film.
Oh, 3,000 Miles of Graceland. Kind of. That was an action movie. So, Kurt Russell. Yeah. Kurt Russell, number four.
I've got Mel Gibson for number four. Watching The Road Warrior, Lethal Weapon. I think Mel Gibson is a solid pick, and you know, he's Australian.
It's a good pick. You know, I was kind of a latecomer to Mel Gibson, though, because like I really didn't discover the Mad Max film still. I was in high school, I did not see a Lethal Weapon film until I went with a friend to see Lethal Weapon 4. I hadn't even seen the first three. I went with a friend to see 4. So I was kind of late. Yeah. I was kind of late to those.
In Hong Kong, you would be dead. Yeah. Jet Li.
Yes.
Go ahead, Matt. What's your number four?
No, I just said my number.
Oh, Mel Gibson. I'm sorry.
Yeah. How's your turn?
My number four is actually Harrison Ford.
Nice.
He was great in The Fugitive. He was also awesome in... I actually saw one of his earlier film roles, the sequel to The Guns of Navarone. I saw Force 10 from Navarone. Wasn't a very good movie compared to the original. But the Indiana Jones movie, you know, those are awesome. He did a lot of his own stunts in those movies. And what else is he? Oh, Air Force One. It's kind of a guilty pleasure. I enjoyed the movie, but I don't know. I've never had the desire to rewatch that one. But he was actually pretty good in the Jack Ryan movies. Patriot Games and Clear and Present Danger. Very cerebral type action movies.
Yep.
But that's my number four, Harrison Ford, the Everyman.
And number three, I have Bruce Willis. Obviously, the Die Hard films. Bruce Willis was the cool guy, man. He was John McClane taking down terrorists. And, you know, he was just Bruce Lee. I mean, Bruce Willis could do anything at that point.
Yeah.
And, yeah.
What else did he do? Hudson Hawk.
Tears for the Sun. Towards the end of his career, he did Tears of the Sun. I felt like
actually kind of midway in his career.
I think he made more. Made this list because of Die Hard. You know, such an influential action film.
He also did Red. Yeah. That's one of the more successful ones. But man, he started phoning it in the last couple of recent years, though.
Yeah.
Yeah. What would you admit?
Yeah, for me, I put Clint Eastwood just because, you know, I you know, seen every Dirty Harry film and seen most of his Westerns. And I feel like he inspired, you know, a lot of notable action stars with his one-liners, his, you know, badass renegade cop, you know, roles. And, you know, I've got Mel Gibson. Clint Eastwood, number three.
My number three is Jackie Chan. As a kid, grew up on a lot of his martial arts movies. My favorite, two of my favorite Jackie Chan movies was Meals on Wheels. I mean, his fight against Benny the Jet is like iconic. Also his American movies like Shanghai Noon, one of my favorites, and
yep.
Rush Hour movies. But my absolute favorite film was Legend of, Drunken Master 2. That's like peak Jackie Chan as far as fight choreography, you know. So
Jackie and I, our first date was going to go see Shanghai Nights, sequel to Shanghai Noon.
Yeah. What's your number two, Mark?
At number two, I pulled a long and I have a tie. Okay.
Oh, look at here.
Sylvester Stallone.
Shame.
And Arnold Schwarzenegger. Shame. They're at number two. They are tied. Arnold and Stallone.
I will allow it.
Because, you know.
I will allow it.
You did a good job twerking tonight, you know, I'll allow it.
Growing up, watching the Rocky films, like you said, Rambo, Demolition Man. With Arnold, you know, it was Terminator, True Lies, Eraser. You know, all they're watching him be a teacher and kindergarten cop. You know, when you went to the movies and you saw Arnold or Stallone on screen, you knew you were seeing bigger than life characters. You were seeing something spectacular and you were almost always entertained. And back when I was 10, 12, 13 years old, I didn't know if the movie was bad or not. I was just like, wow, Arnold kicked someone's ass. Sylvester Stallone kicked someone's ass. And without those guys, I might not be as into movies as today as I am. And that's why I feel they deserve to be together on that pedestal.
Yeah, good choice. What's fair. Your number two, Matt?
I have Stallone as number two, and I'll build on, you know, no one mentioned Cobra. I'll mention Cobra. Cobra's a decent film. Got a good car chase scene in Cobra. And then Over the Top. Don't forget Over the Top.
Oh, that movie sucks.
Demolition Man and Over the Top is awesome. We'll cover it one day, probably as a Patreon flick.
An arm wrestling movie.
The arm wrestling. Are you Hawk? Just out of nowhere, and he's teaching his kid to arm wrestle. But it's a Canon Film movie. But just like in Delta Force, Canon Film does a really good job of developing those characters. So Stallone, you know, y'all have already mentioned his big films. Number two, that's number two for me.
Hmm. Pretty good, pretty good.
Mm-hmm.
My number two is Keanu Reeves.
Oh, nice.
His John Wick movies brought action movies back to the basics. They don't cheat with shaky cam. I love it so much. Speed. You have to give mention to Speed. And Point Break as well.
Yeah.
So on some of his earlier movie roles. And also, in the middle of his career, The Matrix, you know, he did his own stunts mostly as best as he could, given that he had a back injury while filming Wick those films. Movies.
Yeah.
John Wick films are very influenced by John Woo films.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So my number two is Keanu Reeves.
Speed is coming on the show probably early 21. I've been wanting to fit Speed in. We're going to get it in the next few months for sure. My number one, man, is a guy both of you already mentioned, but for me, it's Harrison Ford. Maybe not your typical action star, but without Indiana Jones and Han Solo, I'm not sitting here today podcasting. I mean, just the most important actor to ever live for me in my life. You know, just influenced me for everything that I'm into. Possibly one of my favorite actors, of course, long mentioned playing Jack Ryan, which I thought he was great. I actually liked the cheesiness of Air Force One. It was always a fun movie. Rick Deckard as Blade Runner. You know, I mean, Harrison Ford was the guy that played some of the most important characters of my childhood. And I like Arnold and Sylvester and stuff, but Harrison Ford just means so much more to me and what he's brought to me.
I just love his interviews, too. Whenever they are like, are you trying to reboot all of your franchises, even though you're old? And he's like, you're fucking right, I am. And I'm
he's like, I'm trying to make money.
Yeah.
And I wonder who Matt's number one's going to be. Jeez.
Chris Evans?
It's actually a tie between Jack Slater and Arnold Schwarzenegger. No, you're not laughing? Okay. It's Arnold. I mean, the man speaks for himself. He really does. No one else speaks for Arnold. Arnold speaks for Arnold. So many good films. Films that if anyone else did them, they'd be B or C movies. But Arnold does them, and he's got everything. He's got the biceps.
There's still B or C movies. They're just more entertaining because of him.
He is definitely like that up. He's that extra degree, you know, of actor for those movies. He's got the accent, the cigar, you know, just he's everything. He's like, yeah, man, if you're gonna make a G.I. Joe figure, you know, that's, I mean, he probably looks like Arnold, you know, at least in the 80s.
Yeah, you're not a real Arnold fan unless you haven't seen Hercules in New York.
I have seen Hercules in New York. And then Zeus takes away his powers, and then he's in a weightlifting competition with...
But in the original English dub.
Oh, that one's horrible. But I have seen both. I've seen both. I can't watch the one where they dub his voice. I have to watch... Terrible. The fight with the bear is... Dude, that's a Patreon movie. We've got to do it just for the fight with the bear. And he's massive in that film. The soundtrack is very Greek, very Polk... Very, you know, that kind of music, but it's you know, it's a movie. You know, that's definitely meant for Patreon.
What do you think of his movie Red Heat?
It's decent. I mean, he doesn't speak a whole lot in it, but he plays a good Russian in that movie. Yeah, and I mean, Raw Deal. You know, I own that one. That one's iffy, but you know.
But have you checked out any of his, you know, post-governorship movies, though? Like Sabotage? And
is that the one where he, where the plane crashes that his daughter...
I haven't really seen any of his post-governorship movies, except Expendables.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, Expendables and...
Well, the first movie was kind of a toss-away. The second movie was more Arnold. I haven't seen third one yet. So is the third movie more Arnold?
The second and the third are more Arnold. The first one, he was still an
cameo,
correct?
Yeah.
And he just walked in there and he's just like, hey, he's like, my friend can go. He likes the jungle. And, you know, and then that's it. So the second one, he's the pilot, I believe. I think that's the one where he's the pilot and he's in a little bit more, and then the third, he actually gets some action time.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, my number one is also Arnold Schwarzenegger.
Yes!
The first Arnold movie I've ever watched was Conan the Barbarian. I saw it in theaters, and it left an impression on me, you know? And it was like definitely one of the best. My favorite Arnold movie has to go with... Terminator. No, I'm sorry. True Lies. He's just so... It's such a perfect blend of comedy and action and humor. Arnold at his best as far as pure charisma. Terminator 2 is a so close second. But I actually enjoyed his last movie, Terminator Dark Fate. You know, that was a pretty good movie.
Carl,
yeah. I liked that movie a lot. It was not as confusing as freaking Genesis was. Genesis was just a mess.
It was. You know?
Yeah.
And, I tried to rewatch it, and I was like, I couldn't even make it through it.
Genesis?
Yeah. It's like, it's hard to watch.
What else? I mean, Twins, his first comedy outing.
Oh, yeah.
It was really
Danny DeVito.
Yeah. Yeah, for once he didn't have to worry about doing action. And then what else did he do?
Take out the papers and the trash.
Yeah. Don't sing, God, don't sing.
Yeah. Pumping Iron. I mean, so many lines in Pumping Iron, you know.
I'm going to leave this podcast if you start singing.
That's a good Arnold impersonation. And, there we go.
In so many ways, I agree with you guys. I just picked Harrison because of his influence on me. But Arnold is the king of action films and you know, the studios have tried to take The Rock and try to make him that new guy. But I just don't think there will ever be another Arnold, you know, that's like that crossed those boundaries and those platforms to be a comedy action star like he was, you know.
Yeah, he had that voice where you just didn't know whether to be afraid or laugh.
Yeah,
you know,
if it weren't for that rule in the Constitution that you had to be a natural born citizen to become president, you know, bar none, he was going to be president if it weren't for that rule. Yeah.
That's true. I agree with you right there.
I would have voted for Arnold, you know.
Hell yeah, man. I would have voted to give him 5 terms like Nixon had in The Watchmen.
I watch Jingle All the Way every year at Christmas time, no matter what. Even though it's not a very good movie, I have to watch it at Christmas. You know.
He fights the Big Show.
That's right. Yep. So, man, you guys are getting pretty good at this top five thing. We all had some good picks the last couple of weeks. I'm proud of you guys.
Yeah, and I didn't do a tie this week. I'm
proud of you guys. I know. I had to steal your idea.
Yeah.
Let's get...
You know, well, before that, who do you think would be a good female action star?
I mean...
For the killer?
No, in this list. Like, if we were to have one...
Oh, Sigourney Weaver. Yeah. Sigourney Weaver, easily.
Well, I mean, she only did Alien. Yeah.
Only Alien long.
Well, no, I get along saying. That's why I left Clint Eastwood off my list. As much as I liked him, I didn't feel his action body of work was big enough. Same with Bruce Lee. Bruce Lee's a great martial artist, but he didn't have enough huge hit movies, you know, to really kind of make this list. I see what Long's saying.
He did have Charlize Theron. She's already gotten a couple of actors.
You know, there was a time where they tried to market the girl. I can't think of her name. She did The Long Kiss Goodnight with Samuel L. Jackson. Gina Davis. You know, they tried to market Gina Davis as an action star. It never quite worked. Jennifer Garner. Yeah. They tried to market Jennifer Garner as an action star. And I think that's the thing. It's like, you know, you got to find that person who does enough films. But currently,
I think Charlize Theron is having a renaissance in her career. I think
currently she's probably the one you consider. Fury Road,
Atomic Blonde, really good.
The Old Guard, which is on Netflix right now. The Old Guard. So, definitely, I think she would be a good pick.
Mila Jovovich. She's been terrible action movies, but
she's done a lot of them. Yeah, those are some good names. Yeah.
Kate Beckinsale, she was in the Total Recall reboot.
All the Underworld movies.
Yeah. Underworld.
Yeah.
That's about it for action. Not a lot of female action stars, really.
Yeah.
Yeah. No. But maybe one day we'll have one. Stands out. Yeah, well, let's get into some news then. A few things to cover this week. So Disney has decided they're going to put Mulan out on Disney Plus. I think it's September 1st, around there. But here's the trick. It's going to cost you $30. And now they're saying it's not a rental, that you'll be able to stream it as long as you want, but it's not your typical digital movie. It's not like buying on Vudu where you can watch it on any of your apps. It's going to be you can stream it on Disney Plus only. It's risky, I guess, for Disney. They're taking a chance.
$30.
But you don't really own it. It just means you can stream. You can just stream it indefinitely from Disney Plus.
But do you have to have an active account?
Yeah, have to have an active account. So you're already paying $6 a month, and then 6 months from now, it's going to be on Disney Plus regularly. So yeah, so I think then it's a no for me too. I didn't want to. I mean, I want to see the movie, but I didn't want to see it bad enough that I'm going to spend $30. You know,
$10 like a actual movie ticket price. I'd do it for a rental, right. Maybe. You know,
yeah.
That's pushing maybe even it. Even that $10.
Maybe,
that's pushing
yeah,
it.
Maybe even at 20 for me because I have kids. So you know, I would pay that to go to theaters. But you get over that $20 mark for a rental, that's steep. You know, that's a lot.
Yeah,
because considering you can buy a Blu-ray of a movie for $25 and own it. You know, so I'm like, yeah. Well, and that's kind of my price point. Once you get over that Blu-ray price point of $20, you're asking too much.
Mm-hmm.
They're going to reboot Knight Rider on film.
What?
You know, out of all the 80s properties that hasn't been redone, it feels like this is one that could work. You know, if you get a good action star, we're just talking to action stars, get somebody good to play. I have no idea what fucking David Hasselhoff's character was named, but we know the car's name.
Michael.
Michael, that's right. But we know the car is Kit, and we're going to make a Knight Rider movie. It's all about the car anyway. But you could do some cool stuff with today's technology with a Knight Rider movie. So, I don't know. There might be interest out there for it. Somebody want to see it. And Long has looked
at it. It'll be the second time that they've tried to renew that franchise. They tried in, like, what, 2005, 2006?
Yeah, wasn't there with a TV reboot? It only lasted, like, half a season.
Yeah. They tried to make a Kit a Mustang, which wasn't a bad idea, but then they tried to make it to where, oh, it can also turn into an F-150 and go off-road. And I'm like, no. Kit is just, you pick a sports car, stick with it, make it black, give it the red line that goes back and forward, keep Mr. Feeny alive so that he can still voice Kit, and then maybe make Hasselhoff the head of Knight Industries.
No,
so that you know he has a role.
So Rockstar,
he was good in that one movie where he eats a cheeseburger off the floor.
Yeah,
you know.
So Rock,
ever see that movie?
Rocksteady had been teasing a new game for a while. A lot of people were assuming it was going to be a Batman game. Well, it's in the Batman universe. They're going to make a Suicide Squad game.
Cool.
It's interesting though how Disney really, or DC. I don't know why I said Disney. DC. Really is pushing the Suicide Squad between a reboot of the franchise with James Gunn to animated films to reboots of the comic books. But yet, if you look at the comic book community, most of the comic book community doesn't get overly excited about the Suicide Squad because they do the same fucking thing in every movie. They go steal something. So I guess in the game, you're going to be stealing a lot of stuff. So we'll see. I don't know. It just seems like they're trying really hard to push the Suicide Squad on people. I guess a trailer for the game is going to come. DC is doing something called the DC Dome at the end of August. It's going to be like their digital Comic-Con event. And we'll possibly get trailers for the Batman at that, the Suicide Squad game, and who knows what else. Maybe the Suicide Squad movie. So we'll see.
I am immensely disappointed by that Rocksteady's going to do that game because they've been delaying. There have been rumors that it was going to be a Superman game, and then they, you know, stopped midway. It was going to be a Justice League game, you know, and then in my heart of hearts, I was hoping for an actual, honest to God, good Wonder Woman game because no other character has is a perfect, you know, moveset to have our own video game, you know?
Yeah, right.
But I guess.
Yeah, Rocksteady is. I had heard all those rumors too. There's rumors that they have rights to make a Ninja Turtles game. Who knows if that's ever going to happen? But yeah, I was a little not super excited about that game announcement either. We're going to stay on games for just a minute. Sorry, Xbox users, I'm looking at you, Matt. But when the Avengers game comes out, the only character, there's going to be one exclusive character, and guess who he is? Spider-Man. Exclusive to PlayStation users only are going to be able to use Spider-Man in the game. Even though Insomniac Games has the rights to Spider-Man right now and obviously made the really great Spider-Man game a couple years ago, I think it is going to be the same Spider-Man. They're going to allow him to use that character in the Avengers game, but only for PlayStation users. So, ha! That's what you get, Matt. No, I'm just kidding. You know I'm always going to rub that in. Star Trek. The reboot is going to be delayed again, and not because of the typical reasons. This isn't Paramount doing anything fucked up as they usually do. Noah Wiley's script is a little too close to home. Apparently, his script had to deal with a virus that was wiping out half the universe, and it was up to the Enterprise to find out what was going on. Paramount was like, that's probably not a good idea right now, so they're going back to square one. And in the meantime, they also said that Quentin Tarantino's Star Trek is still not dead, and they still are interested in doing a fourth Trek film with the Chris Pine cast. So, for now, no more, no Trek.
Well, they got to open up their wallets.
They got to pay them.
Yeah.
And,
yeah.
You know, hey, Abrams is done doing Star Wars. Call him up. Hey, come do Star Trek 4. You know, that would be cool. Right. So, and lastly.
But I thought he's done doing sequels.
Oh, I know. But, you know, like you said, money talks. Hey, J.J. Abrams, you want a few million dollars to come make Star Trek 4? Oh, why not? Yeah. Right. And lastly, we're going to get to see Bill and Ted Face Music a week early. Originally going to be September 4th. Now you can buy it on demand or whatever, rent it on demand on August 28th. Now, if that one's only $20,
I'm looking forward to that.
Yeah, if that one's only $20, I might pay that to watch Bill and Ted because that should be a fun movie.
Yeah. $20 dues. Yeah. I need to get the first two movies. I need to rewatch the second movie because that's the mystery movie.
They're on one of the streaming services right now, but I was in Walmart the other day. And there is a $10 Blu-ray with both movies on it sitting at Walmart. I think it was the Walmart by your work, Long. Mm-hmm. So I may run in there and grab it. So, yeah.
Yeah.
That's all the news I got this week, you know. Unless you guys had anything. But no.
No, not that I could tell.
Yeah. Well, we shall.
Not that I can recall.
Preview next week.
That there will be, however, a 24-hour DC event. Soon, you know, and then of course,
that DC Dome that I mentioned, right? Yeah,
right. I don't know why I didn't hear that.
Falling asleep on the show.
I have dementia.
But hey, that's me getting that. I turn a year older tomorrow, so you know. Before we get out of here, I guess we'll preview next week's film. We're going to stay in the action genre next week and do a movie that's kind of has a pretty popular cult following. I mentioned Quentin Tarantino's Star Trek is not dead. Quentin Tarantino actually wrote the script for this film and would have directed it if he wasn't busy doing Pulp Fiction at the time. So he allowed his friend Tony Scott to direct the film, and that is True Romance.
From the director of Top Gun and Beverly Hills Cop 2,
married man, buddy.
A con man.
Ask him if he got the letter.
Did you get the letter?
What letter?
He wants to talk to you.
No time. Tell him we gotta go.
A call girl.
You call for a date?
Huh?
Ah! I'm out of here.
She a four-alarm fire or what?
She seems very nice.
What are you doing in L.A. anyway, huh?
And a suitcase full of trouble.
My name is Vincent Cocotti. I work as consul for Mr. Blue Lou Boyle, the man your son stole from.
Now, all that stands between them and their wildest dreams.
Find out who this winging a prayer artist is and take him off at the neck.
Are 60 cops. 40 agents.
He's a wild man, this kid Clarence. I like him.
30 mobsters.
I haven't killed anybody since 1984.
And a few thousand bullets.
We're all gonna die here. These are cops!
Put them down! Put them down! Put them down!
Christian Slater, Patricia Arquette, Dennis Hopper, Val Kilmer, Gary Oldman, Brad Pitt, Christopher Walken.
Slow it down, man.
In a Tony Scott film.
I think what you did. Was so romantic.
Not since Bonnie and Clyde have two people been so good at being bad. True Romance.
a movie that has really nothing to do with romance, but a lot with romance, as it's a crazy ass action film with a huge cast, including Samuel L. Jackson, Gary Oldman, Brad Pitt, Michael Rapaport. I mean, you name it. They're in this movie. One of the Penn brothers, Chris Penn, I think is in it. Neither one of you guys have seen True Romance, huh? We talked.
No.
Man, two weeks in a row, a movie you guys have never seen. True Romance is a fun movie. I know Longy might not make it on next week's show. You might take a break unless you decide to come on, but maybe you'll take the time to at least watch the movie, you know, and check it out.
I have nothing else better to do.
It's a good film, man. There is a scene in it with James Gandolfini that's a little rough to watch years later, especially after the Me Too movement. But other than that, it's a good movie overall. So looking forward to talking True Romance on next week's show as we move forward into 2020 and this podcasting COVID world. That's it, man. Thank you guys for coming and hanging out and podcasting with me on my birthday movie weekend. It was a good movie pick. I'm glad you guys enjoyed the film. And for all you out there listening, go to rubberrailpodcast.com. And if you feel like, join our Patreon for just $2 a month. You can listen to an exclusive episode. We had not officially announced the August movie yet, but it is going to be the pretty god-awful Double Dragon video game movie. So we're going to make fun of, we're going to have some fun with that movie this month and talk about it on our Patreon. So look for that to be out in the next week or two or three, whenever we get it recorded. We have till the end of August, technically, so we've got some time. But until next time, that's all I got. This has been Mark.
This has been Matt.
This is Long, the Hitman. Hey, Mark, do you want me to sing you happy birthday like the way Marilyn Monroe sang happy birthday to JFK?
I don't know if I have a choice, because I think you're insisting. Now you're letting me down.
Happy birthday to you.
Okay, I'm getting strangely aroused.
The mark's going to start twerking.
Twerky, twerky, twerky.
Yeah.
Twerky, twerky.
Oh, my eyes, I'm blind.
I didn't twerk my white belly. I could have, though. All right. Well, now that we've scared the audience. But thank you all for listening, and we'll see you all next week. Thanks for listening to our Royal Podcast. As always, remember, just go there and do it.
Just go there and do it.
Do it.
Hello, everybody. This is Ming Chen from AMC's Comic Book Men.
And this is Mike Zabcik from The Same, and you're listening to
Rebel Radio.
Hey, this is Marky Ramone, and you're listening to the Rebel Radio Podcast.